Hi, Mindy. How are you feeling?
Hi, sorry. I'm inching along. Just a really slow kind of thing. So thank you for asking. I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. I'm thinking about you.
Thank you. Thank you. Have you been? Everyone okay?
Yeah, we had a lot of snow days here in Charlotte. Because the city doesn't know how to handle snow. If there's 2 inches, school closes for like a week. So, being the northerner that I
Yes.
am, like, what is happening here? But it's always like this.
Yeah,
So.
it's always funny. Yeah, and you guys have gotten like we have barely gotten anything in northern New Jersey with the
Yeah,
last
I.
month or so. So
Yeah, my parents are there, so I know it's like they were waiting and it didn't really happen.
no, it did not. It did not.
Well, welcome everybody. It's good to see all of you. I hope you're doing well. Hi, Libby. I keep on thinking about you, Libby, and your dancing at Art of Client Transformation. It helped me. I was so glad you were on the screen. Hey, Amy Jo. Hi, Giuseppe. Hi Kim, hi Rana, hi Nihal, hi Alana, hi Christina, hi Simona, hi Lauren, hi Cindy. So good to see everybody. Hi Jenna, hi Ray, hi Shauna, hi Liesl. Okay, let me get my notes. So we are starting, not starting a new module today. And the reason why I say that is because in some ways we are starting a new module. We're gonna be looking at rewiring your negative thought patterns. And we're gonna be looking at that specifically today. And then when we meet again live in 2 days. So in that way, it is a new module. But in some ways, the Befriend Your Fear module and the rewiring your negative thoughts module, there's crossover between the two. And really, everything that we look in this whole unit, even when we look at self-sabotage and myth of perfection, different, there's crossover in different ways. So, anyway, I just share that to say new, not new. And also, the way our classes will go the next few weeks is, we're gonna have today's class on rewiring. We probably won't get through everything today, so when we meet in 2 weeks, we'll continue that. And then the week after that, the next time we meet after that, we will do a practicum, kind of putting all the skills together. Simona, oh, did I say 2 days? I meant 2 weeks. Sorry. Yeah. Okay. All right. So, with all of that, let's dive in and start looking at negative thought patterns and rewiring negative thought patterns. 1 second here. Okay, there we go. So, unless you have superhuman powers, or unless you're just so personally evolved to be, almost like a Buddhist monk, and even in that case, chances are that you experience negative thoughts and negative thinking patterns anywhere from sometimes to very frequently. Like on a daily basis, or even an hourly basis, or even more frequently than that. And chances are that your clients and your clients-to-be experience negative thoughts and negative thinking patterns as well. And that's because it's pretty natural and pretty normal to experience negative thoughts. For some people, the negative thought patterns come in, for some people, the negative thought patterns are just there all the time as a way of being. For some people, negative thoughts will start to come in before you start a project or working towards a goal. For others, the negative thoughts or negative thought patterns might start to come in when you start to make forward movement or create results. For me, it's all of the above. So when you're experiencing negative thought patterns, that very persistent voice inside your head wants to tell you maybe that what you're doing isn't enough, or that you're not enough, or that you can't, or that you're not doing it the right way, right? Those are just some, there's so many examples, those are just that, some. And when you tell those types of messages to yourself, oftentimes what happens is that you're more prone to give up or to overwork or to make a decision that isn't aligned for you. Not to mention when you're consistently telling yourself those messages, it's not great just for your mood and your well-being and your nervous system. But those thoughts can make an impact, if unchecked, on your decisions and on your ability to move forward with the things that you want to do. So in other words, even though a negative thought is just a thought in your head, it can have a huge impact on how you show up in your life, on how you feel in your life, and on your actions. So I'm sure most of you, if not all of you, have heard the saying, thoughts become things. And that's exactly why, as a practitioner, it's so important to understand how thoughts work and how we can work with them. Now, just as an important aside, this idea of thought becomes things, we don't want to give it so much power, right? There are some people out there that feel like if I just think it, then this terrible thing is going to happen. Or if I just think positive thoughts, then I'm going to manifest everything that I want, right? That's not what I'm talking about. But I'm talking about how our thoughts then impact how we feel and impact the actions that we take. The other thing that I want to point out is that often negative thoughts can be very similar to fears themselves. Sometimes it shows up as a thought, a negative thought pattern. Sometimes it shows up as a fear. So that's why I was saying this module and the fear module are related in many ways. So you might find that as we work through this today and the next time we meet in 2 weeks, that some of the things that came up for you in our fear module come up for you as we talk about negative thought patterns. And that's okay. That's actually more than okay. We're going to be approaching it a little bit differently in this module, so you just have another way at it for yourself and for your clients. So let's define what I mean when I say negative thoughts or negative thinking patterns, because there are a lot of different ways that we can define negative thoughts. So for the sake of this module, we're going to explore negative thoughts as follows. Thoughts or internal recordings and messaging that persistently or semi-persistently run through your mind and hurt you in some way. I'm going to put that in the chat and then I'm going to repeat it again because I know it's a mouthful. There it is in the chat. I'm going to repeat it again. What we're talking about are negative thoughts or thinking patterns are thoughts or recordings or messaging that persistently or semi-persistently run through your mind and hurt you or negatively impact you in some way. Now, negative self-talk isn't necessarily, and I'm putting quotes around this, good or bad. We don't want to look at it as, oh, it's good to have these thoughts or bad to have those thoughts. Instead, I think a better question is, are these thoughts helpful to me? Are these thoughts helpful to me? Or are they unhelpful to me? If they're unhelpful, if they stop you from taking action, if they negatively impact your mood, if they initiate self-sabotage, then those are the ones that you want to rewire. Here's another way to also think about negative thinking or thought patterns, because this is sometimes how they show up. Catastrophic thinking. It's like we think the worst. I'll never be able to do this, for example, right? Or like the absolute worst is going to happen. And we'll, later today, we'll get more into catastrophic thinking, but for right now, ask yourself, are you kind of prone to catastrophic thinking? Do you, in your mind, often jump to the worst case possible scenario and then kind of stew and hang out there? And by the way, no judgment whatsoever if you do, just so you know, from my youngest years, I was trained by my family to, and by other situations, to be the most catastrophic thinker I think I've ever met. So no judgment, it's just good for awareness. When you're aware, then you can work with it. And it can be overcome. I still have my moments where I go into my catastrophic thinking, for sure. My catastrophic thinker is very much a part of also my victim archetype that I can step into sometimes. But with practice, it really can shift and transform. I often find that catastrophic thinking, the best way I can put it is it's often tribal in a way. And what I mean by that is it often runs in families or in cultures. Right. I'm seeing Mindy and Simona. Mindy saying, I have a black belt in catastrophic thinking. Yeah. Okay. So here's one of the first tricky things about negative thoughts and negative thought patterns. And this is so important for us to really be aware of for ourselves and for our clients. As thinking human beings, right? So as human beings who think, and particularly if you are a very smart human being, which everybody here is, you wouldn't be here unless you were very smart. As a culture, where we have really placed so much focus on our minds and mental thoughts, what happens is we tend to think very, very quickly. We shoot off thoughts very quickly. And if you're smart, even more so. You know, you've got a strong mind. You've got a lot of thoughts happening in your head. And they shoot off very, very quickly, right? So when you're thinking negative thoughts, I can't, I'll never be able to, she doesn't like me, they hate me, I'm this, it's, you know, all of that, those thoughts snap off and fire off very quick, sometimes so quickly that they're not even in complete sentences, and sometimes so quickly that the thoughts can impact us before our higher wisdom even detects what's firing off in our minds. And so because of that, it can sometimes make it kind of hard to even notice when we're thinking the negative thoughts, to actually be consciously aware that we're inside of a negative thought pattern. We just think it's real. We just think it's the truth. We just think it's how it is. But it's because it's happening so quickly in our minds. And then what happens is, because our minds work so quickly, and we'll get more into the science of this in a little bit, we think that thought again, and we think it again, and we think it again without ever catching it in a conscious way. And then what happens is we eventually begin to accept it as truth. Then we don't question that thought, that it's just maybe a thought. We just take it as a truth. And then we take actions based on this thing that we've decided is a truth without ever really deciding that it's a truth. So again, if you happen to be a smarty pants, negative thinking patterns probably affect you even more than some other folks out there. But that being said, a lot of negative self-talk, in fact, most negative self-talk, is inaccurate. The thoughts are simply not true. So, for example, let's say that you've sent out a resume for a job and you didn't get called in for the interview. So your negative thought patterning or your negative self-talk might go like this. Oh, great. See, I knew it. I'm not going to get this job, and I'm never going to get any job that really excites me. Never. I may as well just quit now, except that I'm stuck in my current meaningless career and my meaningless existence. Nothing will ever change, right? Okay, so that's a little bit of catastrophic thinking and all of that that I was talking about earlier. But what I want to point out, even if it's not that dramatic, is the importance of distinguishing between what's true in this scenario and then what's simply a story or inaccurate. Because again, what often happens with negative thoughts is that we make up stories and then all of a sudden we believe those stories as truth, right? So what's true in this scenario is that you sent out a resume and you didn't get called for the interview. That's the fact. Everything else is false. It's just a story. All right, let's pause here for a moment. What's coming up for you so far? What are you seeing here that's important for you? What's moving through you? I'd love to hear some thoughts and shares on this. Rana.
I've got a question on the definition, and it might just be like my own overthinking of the language, but these could also be, or could they not also be, the external messaging that we receive, not just from our own lovely little brains, but the constant messaging and, or, you know, like projections of others as well. that run roughshod in our brains.
I love that you're bringing that in. So for sure, that can be one of the origins of then that the negative self-talk or those thoughts, for sure. As you know, and we, you know, oftentimes we then we internalize those messages. So for sure, that's one of the origin places.
I sensed so, but just for the context of the conversation, it's not just the internal negative self-talk. Right.
So the ways that we're going to look at it today and 2 weeks from now, well, you know, this is a great question, and maybe you can tell me afterwards and I'll think about it too. You know, maybe it can also apply to external. The techniques that I'm going to teach have to do with our own internal thoughts. But I love that as an exercise to see if what can be applied to the, you know, outer projections as well.
All right, great. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a great thought. Let's think about that.
Mm-hmm.
Simona.
Ronan, let me know how this hits for you, but what showed up for me when you said that was, yes, there are, unfortunately for some of us, people in our lives that are very willing to have negative messages on record that we're used to hearing. But what I see this as is our response to those and noticing our response to those. Like, so it's in my going in position on this class is that it's all an inside job. Sometimes our material is hitting up against what's very real. So the story is not a made up story. It's still though, how are we reacting to that is my perspective. And the only other thing I wanted to share was, I love the word when you said important to distinguish what's true / fact versus story. And a word I've been playing around with a lot, it's a word from neuroscience that, and if anyone's interested in neuroscience, Dan Siegel is like just amazing and he's got a lot of great books, but is the word differentiate. Because when we conflate things, it's all a jumbled mess. And when we differentiate, and that's similar to the word distinguish, but I love that word. So I wanted to bring it into the space in case anybody else would love that word too.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you are. I love that word too. Thank you for bringing it in. That's great. Yes, and also agreed on the inside job piece that you mentioned. Jenna saying in the chat, it reminds me of the saying, don't believe everything you think. Yeah, I love that. Easier said than done. Yeah. Kim says, my younger self experiences created the belief that things wouldn't work out. So I used to think, why bother? Yeah. Yeah, Nahal is Dan Siegel. But yeah, Simone, if you could put it in the chat, that would be great. Any other thoughts or anything that anyone wants to share before we continue? Anything else that you're seeing so far that feels important? Lauren's saying, I'm coming face to face with a lot of the messaging I received as a child, expecting the worst. Yep. It's like always bracing, holding our breaths for that scarcity. Yeah, you're living with your mom now, so you can see a lot of that. Okay, good. All right, let's continue. So I want to talk a little bit about the power of the mind. We could, you know, have many classes just on this, but do a little bit on it now. So first of all, another way that negative thoughts function, and check this out if you know this for yourself, is that we stew in them. We get stuck repeating them over and over again, and then they keep us in holding patterns where we just keep on thinking those same thoughts instead of brainstorming new solutions, how to move through a problem. Or a triggered place, etc. Negative thought patterns also often can support someone in being angry or frustrated, either at themselves or others. in such a way so that you don't have to actually move on to solving the problem. It's just much easier or more comfortable to be angry or blame yourself or someone else than to actually strategize and move out of the problem that you're having. A little bit of the judge resistance archetype in there. So I just want to repeat that again, because I think it can be more common than we realize. Oftentimes, negative thoughts support us in being angry or frustrated or in blame at ourselves or others. And then that's just a beautiful distraction from actually looking to solve a problem or finding ways of moving forward or taking responsibility for things. So a really useful book it's kind of old now, it's a couple years old, but I still like to recommend it, is The New Earth by Eckhart Tolle. And one of the things that Tolle speaks about is the pain body. The pain body. And literally, this pain body, the way he describes it, is your ego or your negative thoughts. And what he says is that your pain body, your negative thoughts, are addicted to being in pain. Your pain body will do whatever it takes to remain in the energy of pain. When I first read this over a decade ago, I nearly took my breath away because it resonated so deeply for me, and I recognize this in so many of my clients. Your pain body will do whatever it takes to remain in the energy of pain. In other words, one of the ways that I sometimes describe it is that as human beings, we somehow sometimes gravitate more towards pain than pleasure. And oftentimes, the way that we gravitate more towards pain is through our negative thoughts. It's almost like an addiction. So take a moment on this one for yourself. Have you ever gotten stuck in your pain body where it's like you're just stewing in it, and then maybe a friend or a partner says, oh, it's really not so bad. Maybe you could look at it this way instead. Or, you know, maybe a family member says, I know things feel sucky, but maybe you could do this to get out of your problem. Or perhaps a coach or a mentor offers you next steps actions. And of course, they're honoring what is first. We've already learned that we have to honor what is, right? But this happens, and then literally you're so addicted to the negative thoughts or to staying in the pain that you even get angry at the other person for offering those solutions. Right, so does that happen for you? I'll ask you a couple more questions about this. On a scale of 1 to 10, how active and engaged is your pain body? So 10 is like active all the time, this thing that we're talking about. 1, not really. Then on a scale of 1 to 10, how often do you get angry or upset at others who are offering to maybe shift you or point you towards pleasure but you're just so in your pain body that even if they're honoring what is, you're not willing to go there. And no judgment, right? Just kind of for self-awareness. And so that we can be aware of this with our clients as well. And then who in your family maybe modeled the pain body for you? Rebecca, the second question is, on a scale of 1 to 10, how often do you maybe get angry or frustrated at others when they try to, they've honored what is first, right? But then maybe they try to bring in a solution or something positive or like a help you shift towards pleasure. But it's like you're so stewing in that pain body. All right. Let's pause here, see what's in the chat. Libby's saying, our negativity bias 9 times average more prone to being negative about ourselves. Wow. I mean, can we just all take that in for a moment? And Libby, thanks for sharing that. So we're nine times more prone to being positive about ourselves than negative about ourselves. Yeah, that's what I meant. Negative about ourselves instead of positive about ourselves. Sorry. Mercury retrograde. So this is like, to me, this is kind of even more evidence of how important it is for us to be on top of our thoughts and to actively rewire. Kim is saying, I was just reading again about the contrasting emotions are needed to understand the full spectrum. Pleasure is not fully experienced without experiencing pain. 100%. And I'm not saying we should be pain avoidant. I just want to be clear on that too. Karen, now you can see why your Mama Gina training was also triggering for you. Yeah. Anyone else want to share or share voice to voice what you're seeing in this? When we look at the pain body, anything else that wants to be spoken on that?
Can I come in?
Yeah, go ahead, Tess.
It's reminding me about something, you said this would cross over with the fear. I remember you saying something about fear being comfortable. Mm-hmm. Is that the lesson we talked about that? And I'm thinking about when you just asked us, when you feel really stuck, you're in a negative thought pattern and then you resist someone who's trying to offer support and break you out of it. As someone who goes through cycles where I can be really open and outward, and then I need to go into my kind of burrowing in my cave, kind of really quiet time, I've noticed that I have this pattern where that will happen and it's really needed. And I really, it's really nourishing and I go very inward and then I will get stuck. And the idea of coming out of that is really painful. And I know that I literally resist anyone who tries to pull me out or any idea that it should be happening. And what happens is I eventually just have to step out of that bubble and it's really uncomfortable. It was just reminding me that there's that, when you were talking about the being addicted to pain, there's almost that level that we were talking about before of that comfort where what's familiar, even though it's hurting you, you stay with it because it feels familiar. So there's that kind of comfort in it. Yes. And what I'm beginning to learn, which has happened as well through the Befriending Your Fear work we've done, is that I can kind of see that as the inner child and I can occupy another part of myself that's like cradling that girl and saying, it's all right, we can call a friend or it's okay to like branch out again. And I can kind of do that with her. Whereas when it's just a little scared me, that's much harder to do.
Right. I I love that. I love that that's what's shifting for you. Yeah, and as you were kind of talking about that difference between the little one and the adult, it almost made me feel like when you're resisting others who are trying to pull you out of it, it's like that like tantrum of the little kid. You're like, don't, right? Like, I want to stay here. And how awesome that now you have this awareness and can embody this other part of you that can then relate in a different way and then move towards a different action. Really beautifully done, and thank you so much for sharing that. Nahal.
Just thought you'd do Rana first. I was, but that's okay. Hi. This is bringing up for me. I feel like there's a lot of this that's in my like area of unconscious. Like I used to have a lot of just like constant anxiety and I didn't know I had it. It was the water I swam in. And then I like learned to really like transform each of those thoughts in the moment, like shoot them out of the sky. And then I feel like I cleared a lot of the horizon, but then there's all this like murky stuff I can't really see that's left. So I'm just wondering to what extent. And, I guess we're creating awareness for our clients to help them see. So there's some space for me and my partner to work with creating awareness because I sense that it's like all down there and I can't quite. I'm like, oh, I took care of that, but I know there's more. Right. And then the other thing that it's bringing up is the one place I can kind of point at, even though I don't have a lot of detail, is the way as a child I learned to just not want or think about wanting anything. So I just like really tried not to have needs or desires. So like I never fantasized about a wedding, like none of that kind of stuff. Like there was no I'm gonna have ever. So I wouldn't even do that. And I'm it feels like it's kind of in the same area of the pain body, except it's like a I don't know. I'm just trying to draw a connection here because that's what's lighting up for me, and I'm not quite sure how it connects. Are you seeing what I'm saying?
I am, but I want to ask you more. So even just if you can't see fully, what is some of that connection that you're seeing? How is that feeling, not letting yourself want connected to the pain body?
Yeah. So for a long time, it was like anything I wanted was necessarily not good or bad or like it would be taking from someone else. So there was like that kind of construct existed. And I had to really work with the phrase, like, what I want is good, like it can bring me into wholeness. It can bring like I so I worked with that. And so it feels like the negative thought pattern, it's like it's pre-verbal. It's just like, nope, you can't. Like there aren't even words. It's just like a silent, like straitjacket of like trappedness. That's kind of how it feels.
Yeah, I'm so glad you're bringing that forward about the pre-verbal piece, which is why it's not always when you're working with thoughts. So sometimes when you're working with thoughts, you can keep it all on the cognitive level because the words, cognitive, all of that. And then other times when you're working with thoughts, you want to activate all four levels and especially bring the body piece into it because the words are not gonna. You'll get somewhat to it, but they're not going to fully do it justice. And you want to feel the piece, the different things in your body, and then make other feelings bigger. What that all of that. So sometimes using the befriend your and we'll look at this like using the befriend your fear process with thoughts can be super helpful because of that body piece. The first piece that you're talking about around like there's more stuff down there, but you don't know what it is. So a couple pieces on that. First of all, yeah, it's like there is always more. On the one hand, there is always more, and creating the space, being in the discomfort of the feeling can help the like identify the different pieces that are down there and help them surface. And then other times, and this is so annoying, but it is what it is. Sometimes it's about going back to the things we've already worked on and working on them some more. especially those of us that are smarty pants, we can be been there, done that. And even if we have put a lot of work into that, it's like, oh, this again. And it's like, yeah, this again. So I think it's a both and with the pieces. Is that helpful?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I have no resistance to going through things I thought I've learned. That's happened a lot. But a thing came up as you were reflecting, and I like that straitjacket feeling. I remember that my parents separated when I was a baby, and like just feeling like so helpless in my body. And the thing I wanted was for togetherness, and I could never have it. So that like helped me integrate at a deeper level.
I'm so glad. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you want, if this is a toss that feels valuable for homework, taking time to feel what togetherness feels like in your body, really, really being with that, both in your adult body as well as in your baby body.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Rana.
Wow, both of those exchanges were really helpful and powerful. So thank you, Tess and Nihal, for those shares. And then one of the pieces that I caught is, you know, how often do I get upset or angry that those who are trying to shift me towards pleasure or solution? And what I heard you say was after they've honored what is. And I feel that that's just such an important distinction to bring, because sometimes the capacity for that just is not there for whatever reason. Yes. And it can leap straight to a bypass. And I also want to, I'm sharing this from my own experience. It can go right back to a trauma reenactment as well.
100%.
And so bringing in that, you know, that trauma-informed piece. And then I'm also wondering from both a neuroscience perspective and emotional intelligence perspective as to when there is grief present, mm-hmm. and how sometimes all bets are off the table when grief is present. Maybe it's not a yes or no, but would you tend to agree that that is also a component of everything we're talking about?
Yeah, so yeah. I can't answer that from a neuroscience perspective in a way that, you know, I can like confidently, but I can respond in this way and tell me, I think this is what you're getting at. It's back to knowing what season a client is in, right? So if there's a lot of grief, they're in winter, and it may not be time either for action or positivity or a different way of thinking about it yet. Sometimes it's about holding, and that is part of honoring what is, right? Yeah. Like just holding that space for the grief.
Sure. I guess I'm looking at that both as, you know, being the one supporting clients and also being one seeking support.
Absolutely.
As well. So, okay. That's helpful. It's the grief pieces got me curious. All right. Thank you.
Yeah. No, I think it's a great point. And we want, you know, like we can't be pulled out of grief by somebody else, and we can't really pull ourselves out either. We can really just hold the space or ask for the space to be held, you know, with us.
Sure.
So that we can meet it with just as much like presence and self-care as we can, and then, you know, move through it as it wants to be moved through.
Thank you.
Great question. All right, I'm seeing in the chat, the good news is according to science, anything that's learned can be unlearned. We're going to talk a bit about this in a little bit. And a lot of Karen and Cindy and others, that this again piece, I'm with you. And Stacy's saying, I'm guiding clients to pre-verbally process, activating all four levels along with stream of consciousness art making. We're going to talk about that also. I'm so glad you're bringing that in. Yeah, the combination of art and coaching, really juicy. And art is can activate the body level, can activate the emotional level, can activate the spirit level. So I'm so glad you're already doing that, Stacy. We'll talk on some of those applications in a little bit. All right, let's keep on going. So as we all know, oftentimes we can't change certain circumstances in our lives, but we can change how we think about or perceive those circumstances. So I'm sure many of you have heard the saying, a miracle is a shift in perception. And that's from A Course in Miracles, which I haven't read, but I've just heard of. And I've always loved that phrase, and I'll say it again. A miracle is a shift in perception. A miracle is a shift in perception. So in other words, a miracle isn't necessarily when your outer circumstances change. It's when you're able to change your thoughts about the circumstance. When you can change your thoughts about something, an opportunity opens up to feel better about it, or be in a better mood, or have a better outlook, or reduce anxiety, or maybe even find solutions. Our circumstances, for as much as people want to say otherwise, our circumstances aren't always in our control. They just are not. Shit happens. But how we experience those circumstances and who we are and how we feel as a result of those circumstances are often in our control. To me, this is such a profound idea. Can you think of a time when you've had a shift of perception and just the outer circumstance hasn't changed, but the thought has changed, the perception has changed, and it's been miraculous. It's really changed so much of your experience of a situation. You guys know what I'm talking about? Just let me know. Yes. Yeah. Okay. All right, so we're not going to get too scientific here, but I do want to talk about the brain itself for a moment, because in a pretty basic way, because understanding how the brain itself works is important when it comes to moving beyond your negative thought patterns. So over the last few decades, neuroscientists have really made some pretty amazing discoveries around how your thoughts physically shape your brain. How your thoughts physically shape your brain. So when you think something, when you have a thought, for example, I can't do it, or I'm not good at this, or people don't like me, you know, whatever the thought is, your brain literally creates a physical groove or a fast track inside of it with that particular thought. And it's almost as if the thought carries a certain energy, and that energy creates a groove in your brain. So literally a neural pathway, that's what the groove is called, is created when you have a thought. And then the more that you think a certain thought, the deeper that neural pathway is grooved. The deeper it's grooved. And that literally changes the makeup of your brain itself. And here's the thing. It turns out our brains are somewhat lazy. And what happens is when there's an idea, when you've had an idea and you've thought it a couple of times and it's created that neural pathway, your brain is lazy. It doesn't want to have a different thought. It's just easier for it to think that thought that keeps on getting grooved in. Just go down that one. It's almost like, I think of it like skiing. If you're a skier, it can be easier to go down in the snow where the skis have already created the pathway in the snow versus creating a new pathway in the snow. And then the more you go down it, the quicker you go down it. It's like grew, you know, and you're more prone to go down it in that way. So when we say rewiring negative thought patterns, we're literally talking about creating new neural pathways in our brains and making those neural pathways deeper so that they become more of the what we go down automatically. And in order to rewire negative thought patterns, I also just want to acknowledge how incredibly powerful our minds are. So I'm just going to give you two examples from thousands and thousands of examples. So the first is from a study, and these are pretty old studies. I haven't updated these lately, just so you know. But this is from a study of pain patients and placebos. So in 9 double-blind studies comparing a placebo to aspirin, placebos proved to be 54% as effective as the aspirin itself. Now, from this, one might expect that placebos would be even less effective when it's compared to a stronger painkiller like morphine, but that's not the case. In 6 double-blind studies, placebos were found to be 56% as effective as morphine in relieving pain. Here's just one other example. And this is now probably about 10 years old, this study, but in a study of a new kind of chemotherapy, so now 10 years old, 30% of the individuals in the control group who were given placebos lost their hair. 30% lost their hair. So think about these examples for a moment. They're pretty amazing. They show us that thoughts are so powerful that not only can they dictate our actions, and not only can they dictate our experience of particular events in our lives, but sometimes they can dictate how our body functions. And by the way, again, I'm not advocating like just think it and everything is going to be great. I'm just using these as examples of how powerful the mind can be. So I see there's some books being offered in the chat, and that's so awesome. I haven't read Thinking Fast and Slow, but I'm gonna add that to the list. Another one that I'll add to the list is, I put it in the chat, The Brain That Changes Itself by Norman Doidge. That's all about neuroplasticity, the brain that changes itself. All right, so let me pause here. Anything else that wants to be shared? I mean, of course, you know, there are whole courses just on neural pathways and plasticity and all of this. For our purposes, I'm giving us a basic understanding. But anything else that wants to be added around any of this for right now? Or anything that's coming together? Kim?
So funny, because I just caught a clip, Simon Sinek,
mm-hmm.
and he was talking about, like, I can make everybody in the room talk about an elephant or think about an elephant. And then he shared that skiers, they don't focus on, oh, I don't want to hit a tree. They focus on the space between the trees.
Ah.
And it's kind of connecting for me. That, yeah, when we're focused on the negativity, it just creates more of those thought patterns versus the effort it takes to start to rewire that and to begin thinking more in line, because then that's our brain goes, oh, that's what you want me to focus on. And it's kind of the way it was phrased to me back when I was doing this work for myself was, you know, give your brain the job that you want it to do.
I love that.
And that has stuck with me. And then when he said the thing recently about the skiers and now you're talking about it, I'm like, oh, so we're going to revisit this again. What am I going to learn this time?
I love that. And I love that phrase, give your brain the job that you want it to do. It's so powerful in this context.
Yeah, because it makes you feel like something you can put some control into. And you did say something earlier in the notes about that, but just the ways in which, especially if you have had that victim energy archetype, that it begins to give you a place to start, because when you're in it, it can just feel so hard to pull yourself out of it. And especially if you put in depression and anxiety and a bunch of other stuff on top of it.
Completely.
What Rana was saying, like, if we don't honor just where somebody is, we can't ever hold the space for them to find a way out of that they are willing to do, not what we think they can do based on where we are with it, but where they are with it.
Yeah, 100%. And that's why honoring what is always, like, why we look at it in foundational principles, like, you know, creating awareness, like, it's such an important piece. Mm-hmm. And then also, like you say, it does take effort to have different responses.
The expectation to normalize that you will keep, like, it's a practice and it's one of the best practices, but we don't give it credit for that, is that it's a practice to learn how to do this differently. And we kind of have to normalize that for people, because there is this expectation with the whole societal fix syndrome that we're just going to one and done it. And then we're going to go through it. And it's like, if you tell people you're going to come at this, but each time you hit it, you're going to hit it a little differently. It takes away the shame and the judgment that we put on ourselves for not getting it right, not fixing it. At least that's what I have experienced in the work that I do with myself.
Yeah, agree. 100%.
Thank you.
Yeah. Anything else that wants to be shared? Anything else that's coming together on this? Yeah, myth of perfection. Yeah. Amy Jo.
Kim, what you just shared was really beautiful. I just want to say thank you for that. As a person who I myself have had a TBI, a traumatic brain injury when I was younger. And so, and when that happened, there was no real neuroscience. What we know now is so different than what we knew 20, 30 years ago. And I just wanted to reflect, just kind of adding on to what Kim was saying, is that and someone said myth of perfection in the chat, that, you know, holding space for a person through something that is so hard to understand is so powerful. And what I've noticed over the years of my, you know, working through having having to reprogram my mind without having the information is that when neuroscience started stepping forward and giving us more information, I felt so justified, like, oh, somebody understands me and this is so powerful to be able to have more context. And so as coaches, I feel it's so important to be able to educate our clients in this way so that they don't go into that myth of perfection without having the understanding that this is how it actually works. And so, you know, in more recent years, I've read all these books. The books are so valuable because now having that understanding, all those years that I was beating myself up over not being able to figure out and not being able to shift or change these things, now having the information, it makes it so much more valuable. So I just wanted to, you know, if you can, and trying to bring this information forward to your clients as you go, because it really, really shifts the capacity for being able to go there.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing all of that. And also just that perspective from having the TBI, I think it just kind of helps integrate everything so much deeper. So thank you for sharing that. Okay. All right, let's keep on going. So what we've looked at so far is kind of like the background information, the pieces that just we want to kind of understand and know around thoughts. And I want to start moving now towards how we can support our clients to rewire their negative thought patterns. We're going to get started on it today, and then it'll be a to be continued to our next class. I'm presenting it in a linear step-by-step fashion because that's the only way to present it. But as we go through the steps today and in our next call, just know going in, and I'll keep on reminding you as we go through it, it's not always going to be in the linear way that I'm presenting, in the order that I'm presenting, or that even you have to hit every one of the steps that I'm presenting. But for the sake of our learning, I'm going to share it in this way, and then you can kind of mix and match once you have an understanding of the pieces. Okay, usually, not always, but usually a good first step when we're working with clients or ourselves is to identify the negative thought that is rearing its head. And even me saying that is simplifying things because, like, let's be honest, sometimes two or three or like a whole constellation of thoughts that are enmeshed might be presenting themselves at the same time, right? But again, for just the sake of like linear thinking right now, you know, sometimes it's about identifying the one that feels the most resonant in that moment, or that might be impacting the most. Sometimes you'll identify one and then that'll lead to other ones underneath it, right? Whatever that is. But we want to support clients and for ourselves identify negative thought that's coming up. And we especially want to do that this because as we looked at earlier, those negative thoughts can happen so quickly and so persistently that we may not even notice we're having a negative thought. Or a thought that's limiting us in some way. We just think it's the truth, and that's just how it's supposed to be. And so this step of identifying the negative thought is about slowing things down so that the client or ourselves, we can start to even just see, well, this is the thought that I'm having, and this is limiting me in some way. When we do this, then we can also start, as we looked at earlier, and I'll use the word that Simona brought in, to differentiate between, you know, the truth and the story. So David Burns, in his book, The Feeling Good Handbook, talks about what he calls common cognitive distortions. Common cognitive distortions. And this is basically negative thinking. So I want to share some of those common cognitive distortions with you. I share them with you not because you're necessarily going to use those. So the book is called The Feeling Good Handbook by David Burns. Let me pop that in the chat. I think it's in your resource sheets as well, but just in case not. These aren't necessarily, it's not like you're necessarily going to say to your client, I think you're doing mental filtering right now. That's one of the cognitive distortions. We'll get there, right? But it's for you as the practitioner. So that, because sometimes we can get caught up in our clients' negative thought patterns, right? And not realize that it's a negative thought. And we think it's a truth too, even though it's a story. So we want to kind of be watching for that, for ourselves. Here's an example of that. About a year ago, I was working with a client and she was pretty newly pregnant. Maybe she wasn't so newly, maybe she was in her second semester, trimester already at that point. Anyway, it doesn't matter. We were planning for her business, you know, the pregnancy leave and beyond, and we were talking about things. And she started in as we were looking at the planning with this idea that she had to optimize bringing in money before her maternity leave, since she was going to be on maternity leave and not be in her business at all, right? So she has to optimize the time that she has left in the pregnancy, make as much money as she can so that she can take that time off for the maternity leave. Now, if I hadn't been on top of that thinking, I would have just taken that as truth. Like, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. We're going to like hustle now, right? And bring in as much money now before that baby comes. It's going to be harder after the baby comes. But luckily, I'm always kind of on the lookout for the difference between story and truth. And, you know, is there a cognitive distortion happening here? And so I was able to challenge that, right? Like, is that actually true that you need to hustle for the next couple of months? And as we looked at it, it was so huge for her, because what she ultimately saw was that she didn't have to. Like, she didn't have to optimize that time in that way. And that took so much pressure off of her. She was able to enjoy the rest of her pregnancy so much more and actually set up deeper foundations for growth for when the baby came and beyond. All right. So here are some of the common cognitive distortions that David Burns identifies. You don't need to use them, but I think it's just helpful for us to think about them in these ways. So number one, one that he identifies, all or nothing thinking. So in other words, all or nothing thinking is evaluating people or situations in extreme black or white terms. For example, since I didn't get this job, I can't get a job that makes me happy. We're going to go way deeper into black or white thinking or all or nothing thinking in The Myth of Perfection, because that's one form of negative thought patterns, right? So that's here, all or nothing thinking. Here's another one, mental filtering. So what that is letting a single negative experience negatively color the whole situation. letting a single negative experience negatively color the whole situation. So for example, let's say you're preparing lunch for some friends and you discover that you forgot to buy the essential ingredient for lunch. Because of that, all you can think about is how the whole lunch is going to be ruined. So in doing that, you're forgetting about the connection among friends or how the side dish is going to be good. You're letting a single negative experience negatively color the whole situation. So actually, I meant to ask for each one of these if you've fallen into these before. So if you've fallen into all or nothing thinking or mental filtering, just let us know. Yeah, okay. Here's another one. Disqualifying the positive. So disqualifying the positive, that's taking a neutral or even a positive experience and turning it into a negative one. Taking a neutral or positive experience and turning it into a negative one. So for example, a friend comes over to visit and tells you that you look great, but your immediate thought is, I don't feel great. She doesn't understand. So you're taking something positive and making it negative. Or somebody tells you that you did a great job, or you did do a great job on something, but you can only see what didn't go well, not what did go well. Have you disqualified the positive before? I certainly never have, but maybe you have. All right, here's another common, here's another common cognitive distortion. Jumping to conclusions. Jumping to conclusions is what David Burns calls it. So quickly jumping to a negative conclusion that isn't justified by the facts of the situation. Quickly jumping to a negative conclusion that actually isn't justified by the facts. So one kind of example of jumping to conclusions is mind reading. You assume you know why someone else does what he or she does and you don't bother to check it out. So for example, you pass a coworker in the hallway and you say hi. If that coworker doesn't respond to you, you mind read. You're like, oh, they must be upset with me. What did I do wrong? But maybe if you actually check it out, you find that the coworker was preoccupied with a sick child. And that's why he didn't say hi. Right, so that's mind reading, one way of jumping to conclusions. And then another way of jumping to conclusions is what David Burns calls fortune telling. So in other words, you just quote unquote know that things are going to turn out badly. For example, if you wake up with a headache, and then because you woke up with that headache, you already assume that your whole day is going to be ruined. All right, I'll share a couple more. Another one he identifies is emotional reasoning. He calls it emotional reasoning. That's when you take your emotions as evidence for the truth. Taking your emotions as evidence for the truth. So if you feel that something is right, then it must be true. Now, I just want to point out, this is different than tapping into your inner wisdom. This is something else. So an example of this is, I feel useless, therefore I am useless. That's emotional reasoning. Taking your emotions as evidence for the truth. Mm-mm. Yeah, Carlita's saying, I feel so named. Yeah, I mean, we all fall into these, you know? All right, I'll share two more for now. Another one he names is labeling. So labeling is when you identify a mistake or negative quality and then describe the entire situation in terms of that mistake or quality. For example, instead of seeing yourself as an individual who's working through your difficulties and balancing all of the things in your life, you might find yourself saying, I'm defective, I'm imperfect, I can't get it together. You're labeling yourself because you're working through difficulties and balancing the things in your life. And then one more, personalization. Taking responsibility for a negative event, even when the circumstances were beyond your control. That's personalization. Taking responsibility for a negative event, even when you know the circumstances were beyond your control. So for example, you and your partner are going out to a restaurant, but the service is poor or the food isn't good. And because you chose the restaurant, you feel really badly for making a bad choice and ruining the evening. You're taking responsibility for a negative event. It's personalization. Yeah. Okay, I know I went through those quickly. You have those also in your resource sheets, but I want to pause now. What are you seeing? What's coming together? Which one of these do you know really well? And just so you know, I don't have all of these memorized. I'm not sharing them with you so that like you have them all memorized in your sessions and you're looking like we're sharing for you to just connect in with them so it like seeps in and you can look for some of these things, right? When you're speaking with clients or inside of yourself. The more you inspect it for yourself, the more it will be there for you in your client work, but it's not about memorizing it. I don't want to put any myth of perfection about this out there. Simona.
So I am not sure. Actually, I am sure that this is just resistance and fear. But I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, I'm not Libby. I'm not a neuro coach. Sorry. This is like my level playing field and my brain going like, how am I supposed to help a client identify it? And I know this is fear and resistance. And I know we have tools like creating awareness and asking questions and we have our intuition and all the things that we have already learned. And part of my brain's still going like, well, what if my client is not self-reflective and they're not willing to see? I'm just having noise. And I say this even though I can see that it's noise and even though I can see it's fear, it's there. So I don't know if there's any advice that you have for a new person in looking at this.
I'm going to do something annoying and coachy, so I apologize.
What do you think, the answer to that?
What is your higher self or inner coach? What's the wisdom that your inner coach has about this?
A little locked up or else I wouldn't have even asked the question. The noise and panic that's coming is like, I'm like, oh, I want to know what training Libby did so that I can do that training too, so that I can know these things so I can be good enough for my clients. But I guess, oh, their self-worth right there rearing its head again.
Yeah. Okay. I'm so glad. So we can just you're so great at like sharing your inner process, right? So we can just hold this with you. And right. So what I'm hearing is like that, that's really what's happening here. It's about the not good enough coming up.
I see that more now.
Yeah. Yeah. Can I hang with you with that for another moment?
Mm-hmm.
Is it okay to close your eyes?
Yeah.
Yeah, so just hold space for you're not good enough. And just give it, hold space like you would for a client and give it love as much as you can, of course. And just be with it. It's activating because it knows that you are good enough and it wants to protect you. What does it want you to know from its highest wisdom?
To trust.
Yeah. Did you hear how your voice shifted as you said that?
I did.
Yeah, you just dropped right in. Yeah. Thanks. What are you seeing right now that's important?
I'm appreciating this community so much because I was spinning and I decided that instead of me supporting myself through it, that I could ask for help for you all to support me and hold me through it, which was both a much faster process and a new experience. And so I appreciate you all. And so I'm just noticing the support. And then I am supported. Yeah. And then the not enough one and the self-worth. What was the thing that we said in the chat earlier, all of us? This again. This again. This again. Yeah. And so that's this again for me, but a new experience of it. So thank you.
Thank you for sharing and bringing that forward and being willing to ask for the support.
Thank you guys. And thank you, Joanna. Yeah. Whew. I'm peacing out unless there's something else. I think that feels
complete. You're good.
Yeah. I think so too.
Yeah. Good. Good. Everyone deep breath in and out. What else wants to be shared or what's coming together? What are you seeing? What's feeling important? Rana.
Yeah, this feels vulnerable too. And I even typed ouch in the chat when you hit on that personalization piece. And I recently had a session with someone here for some practice. And I think what hit me on this is that this place where I can go to wanting to offer compassion to both myself and the other, wanting to be honest in clear and communication and taking a form of self-responsibility. But what really like just hit me in the heart was this space of feeling like I'm in such a vulnerable position right now. And it's like, I couldn't fucking control COVID happening. So get the fuck off my back, dude. Like, I can't control this anymore. And it's just like, whew. So the minute you said that personalization piece, I was like, oh, fuck. Yeah. Like, whew.
Yeah, I'm so that's coming.
Yeah, and it is, that is like such self-abuse.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's practical stuff to figure out, but I mean, yeah, I gotta knock that shit off real quick.
Yes. Yeah. And I, Rana, so first of all, I'm so sorry that you were, you know, having those thoughts. Yeah. I'm so glad that the awareness is coming through, and I'm so, so sorry that was happening. I'm glad it's coming through now so that you can shift it. And I just can't help but think that you were being so intuitive at the beginning of our call today with the very first question that you asked about outside messaging.
Exactly. That's why I was looking at that both and perspective with this, whether that's with me personally and stuff I've got going on, and with clients who are navigating through similar things.
Yes, 100%. And then specifically to what you're speaking about, you know, unfortunately, one of the messages that are just kind of floating around in society is like, it's your fault if you get COVID. You could have, of course, we can take precautions and all of the things, right? But you don't want to personalize.
Well, yeah, and I don't mean just getting COVID myself, for example, but I mean the whole
all of it,
the whole circumstance of it all, and as we're all either in some way, more than others, of course, navigating through the individual and collective aftermath of it all, and we're still navigating.
Yeah, not even aftermath, right? I know, I mean, not even. Yeah. So seeing everything that you see right now, what is a higher truth or a better belief to believe?
Well, I think what's emerged for me this week is that even though I don't know how a solution is going to show up, I'm also very aware that I'm aware of so much good that has emerged recently. And I'm not just talking about money, but in my life and in my business. And yet it's this constant, you know, internal and external, not enough, not enough, not enough, not enough.
Yeah.
And then it's threat at the same time,
yeah,
right? And at the same time, I can't also help but feel that, like, and I just through my own lived experience that that somehow, some way, everything's coming together, and I just can't see it right this second.
Yeah, beautiful. So that's for homework for you, Rana. That's where I want you to focus. I want you, if possible, a couple of times over the next few weeks to write on that. Things are coming together, even though I can't see exactly how yet. And reinforce that neural pathway a bit through a couple of journal sittings.
I've got about 10 pages of that already. So.
Awesome. Yeah, so you're on your way. And then also with what you do have, right? Instead of the not enough, on what there is enough of. Thank you.
Yeah, and I just, a final thought on this is that the piece around the resistance archetypes, weaving that together has been just gold. As well, because those antidotes, a couple of those really proved helpful. You know, even still navigating through this. So it's kind of interesting. So
I'm so glad. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks. Yeah.
Holly.
Hi. So I was thinking about all these negative thoughts that I have that are recurring all the time, like, because it's the same ones a lot. Of course, there's patterns. And I'm curious about shifting the energy, because I've done a lot of the thought work behind that, but I don't, like, it doesn't always shift my energy to do the thought work. So do you have recommendations, like, to a more embodiment or somatic like how to get in there a little deeper?
Yes, we're gonna to be continued, unfortunately, but or fortunately, it's good, I think, to sit with all of this too. But when we meet in 2 weeks and we continue this, we're gonna look at this from activating 4 levels of learning and processing, because as I said earlier, it's not, even though thoughts are cognitive, and we do want to think about that rewiring in the brain, in order to do that, we want to activate all 4 levels. One of the things that I read once that I just find so fascinating is that repeating mantras, like in Indian tradition, and so scientific study has been done on this, repeating mantras, the reason why it works when it's done in certain traditions has less to do about the fact that we're repeating the words all the time, and it has to do more with the tunes and the singing. In other words, the embodiment of it, and then how those tunes make you feel energetically and how that reverberates through the body, and then that supports the whole rewiring process. So you're on to, like, Holly, you're like, this is a great cliffhanger, like, to be continued at the end of the episode for next time. Yeah. For now, though, what I want to invite everybody to do is to start noticing all of the things that we've been talking about today, both for yourself, as well as if you're working with clients. You don't need to do anything yet. We'll talk more next time on things to do. But now I just want you to notice what's going on for yourself, what's going on for your clients. Are your clients engaging in any of these kinds of cognitive distortions? Are they stewing in things? Are they more prone, et cetera? What are the thoughts? And then we'll go from there next time. So I know we're at time and I want to honor it. If you need to go, you know, we're like officially done. But also I have a sense there's another question or two in there. So if anybody has any cues and you want to ask before we wrap, I'm more than happy to answer. Anyone have anything else that they want to share or ask? Kim.
It's more an awareness, I guess, through my own process, because I've been very much in the seasonal and the cycles and all of that. One of the things that it's saying about the current Mercury retrograde that we're in is that you are meant to notice and be aware and then pause and don't do anything about it until the end of Mercury retrograde, because the whole point for those that follow that is, and I see this in relation to how we do this work, is that sometimes there's this like, okay, I see it and I want to fix it, versus sit with it, be with it, look at it from a bunch of different places. I often tell my clients, sleep on things, mm-hmm. because there's the process of what is conscious, but then also what is subconscious or unconscious, and letting that kind of come through. That doesn't happen from the minute we have that cognitive awareness. And if we don't give our space, and because I've spent so much time, I think I'm going to start calling myself like a winter expert.
Yeah.
because what I've learned through this process is the more that we sit back, the ease shows itself when you stay in the unfolding and the mystery and all of that. But if you don't give it enough time, then in comes effort. And it's like, we're going to do it this way, and it's going to be harder. And we're going to just keep bringing you all of these experiences, because you're not asking for an easy transition. You're making or expecting it to be hard.
Yeah, so beautifully said, and especially this piece around the value of just sitting with a new awareness.
Yeah.
Like, yes, we want to act and all of that breakthrough into transformation, but actually part of that process is to be with a new awareness and just be with it.
Yeah.
And be with it and see it and name it and then be with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Stacy saying in the chat, your bias as a craniosacral. Yes, 100%. The craniosacral and the somatic pieces, we want to pair them with the cognitive processing. Cindy.
Thank you so much for today. I've you know, worked with negative self-talk and come up with the mantra on that, but and it just keeps coming back again and again and repeating it. But I love these eight categories, or just the container you've created today. And I'm really looking at these deeper dive questions of how, you know, I hear it, I do my affirmation and I get the hell out of my way. But this asking me to reflect more, what are the most common ones, I think is going to be very interesting when we come back in 2 weeks. So thank you.
You're so welcome. Yeah, I'm so glad that it's resonating, and I can just see even in your energy, like it's sparking some important things. Good.
Thank you.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much. I'm sending you all, as always, a ton of love, and I'm thinking about you, and I will see you in 2 weeks, but if you need anything before then, just let me know. Bye.